Reading from Narada Bhakti Sutras, text 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Excuse me, one second. Ishvarasya yabhimani veshitvat dainya priyatvaccha. Furthermore, the Supreme Lord dislikes the proud, the proud, but is pleased with the humble. Priyatvat. He has love for the humble. Purport. The humility Narada praises here is not ordinary modesty, but it is in relationship to the Supreme Lord. The whole point is that the bhakta does what Krishna likes. That's humility. Recognizing the supremacy of God. That's humility, recognizing the supremacy of God. There are 10 subject matters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one is sthanam. Sthanam means the right situation. And the right situation is described as sthir Vaikuntha Vijayo. That the right situation is that the Supreme Lord is victorious. And then the next subject matter of the Bhagavatam is atisargas visargas ja stitir poshinam. That when you recognize this, you're protected. Because you're in harmony with what you are part of. And that's existential protection. The protection is not even coming from outside. The protection is coming from yourself. It's like the hand is part of the body. If it recognizes the supremacy of the body, then the hand is protected, protected as a hand. And it is nothing else but a hand. And without that service to the body, it has no protection. So, stitir Vaikuntha Vijayo, poshanam, it's protected. We are protected when we serve God. Of course, there is also relationship with the divine. A relationship means reciprocation. And because the absolute reality is powerful, all-powerful, then in that relationship, the absolute reality protects us. And what does protection mean? It means God does what is best. It doesn't mean that our material position necessarily will flourish or that it will decrease. It means God will do best what brings us closer to the soul, which is our only real happiness. You can only be truly happy in relationship to what you are. If you try to act in another way, then you're assuming an identity that's superficial. And therefore, you begin to try to satisfy something which is not yourself. And that's why in egotistic consciousness, money, followers, sex life, illicit sex life, it doesn't ultimately satisfy people. And you can see, why are they not satisfied? Because they're not satisfying themselves. They're satisfying a conception of themselves that's external to the self. So that's poshanam, you're protected. And when you don't accept the supremacy of God, and you act fruitively, selfishly, based on a false conception of entitlement, due to a kind of psychological supremacy that we all hold. Whatever our level of self-esteem is, we seem to look out through the body, surveying the world as we are centered within it. That's not who we are. And when we do that, there is reaction. That's called the law of karma. And the reaction is a force that moves against that false identity to bring us to our true identity. Sanatana Goswami describes six symptoms of a surrendered soul, and each of them involves humility before the Lord. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. Rakshi yastiti vishvaso, goptritve varanam tata. Atma nikshepa karpanye, Shadvidha Sharanagati. The six aspects of full surrender to Krishna are: 1. Accepting things favorable for devotional service. Rejecting things unfavorable for devotional service. Believing firmly in the Lord's protection. Feeling exclusively dependent on the mercy of the Lord for one's maintenance. Having no interest separate from that of the Lord, always feeling meek and humble before the Lord. So Sharanagata, to go for shelter. Is the door to bhakti. It's even before perhaps legitimate sentiments of bhakti. It's an understanding. And what is that understanding? The understanding is we are poor. Yesterday, I went to the opening of the Govardhan retreat just to get the Sangha. Burijan Prabhu, Sachinandana Prabhu, Giriraj Maharaj, Jagatarini Prabhu, Mataji, Madhavananda Prabhu, Prashant Mataji, Adi Purush, Mother Srimati, and so many souls, whether they're sitting and giving the class or listening, it's an exalted assembly. And it's so powerful just sitting in assembly. There's about 200 people at the retreat. And it's right by the side of Govardhan. And Sachinandana Swami described the kirtan he did someplace. And in that kirtan, he saw there was a beggar, and he could read by the physiognomy that he was actually an intelligent person, maybe even somewhat cultured, but somehow karmically, I forgot what area he was, but the man obviously didn't even have what to eat. And he was sitting down and holding out his hands, begging as the kirtan party went by and when people walked by him, just begging, really in need of food. And that in need naturally attracted the soft heart of Sachinandana Swami to give him some food, some mercy. So Sachinandana Swami said that should be the mood of people at the retreat. We are poor. That's not an artificial imposition. That is our position. We are not the proprietors. We are not the controllers. Everything we have except our love for God is external to the real self. We may be in temporary possession of it. Prabhupada gives the example of a bank teller in relationship to the fortunes that may move through their hands. But it's not ours. So humility is a very, very natural position. And it is the only position from which love can flow through one's heart. So in any relationship, one appreciates humility because they are it's completely intertwined with love. Because if someone has any affection for you, they will try to serve your needs. And your desires when they are a true reflection of your needs. So we love people who are humble. Not even relation to ourselves. If you think about it, we love people who are humble even if we don't have a relationship with them. Because their humility is reflecting their essence. And within that essence and within that humility is a desire to serve and love. Love is such a beautiful thing. Not the love that's mixed with a sentiment of self-stimulation and gratification. As when an egotistical man wants to, as they say, hit on a lady. It's for him. It's for his senses and his ego. And that may be at one level of the spectrum. But as long as our affection is not connected to God, either by directly serving God or by serving people with the conception that their interest is in relationship to God. Then we morph into false ego. And the love is mixed with pride, which is why love is for God. And when it's not for God and in cognizance of God, it will have to be, to some extent, selfish. When we are embodied, we do have natural affections. When we are liberated, we have natural affections. But in all cases, no one likes one who is proud. Anyway, you can like someone who is proud, but your affections are misplaced. Or you may like someone who's proud because you're humble and you have compassion for them, which means you see their soul. And pleased with the humble, think right now of someone who is really, truly humble. Do you like them or not? And see someone who is proud. Do you like them? And what is that humility? And what is the internal consciousness of that humility? It doesn't have to do in an absolute way with self-deprecation. We should get that out of the way. It's a happiness with who we are, which is not God, and we don't want to be God. We are happy to be an insignificant particle of consciousness, of the supreme consciousness. Why should we not be happy? That's a position of love. Why should we only think that happiness comes when we are materially significant, when we are big, when we are powerful? Why should we rebel against the platform of the soul? Why does it disturb us? Why should we be insignificant? not insignificant. It's infinitesimal. It's not insignificant. It's significant. We are part of God. Isn't that significant enough? God is great, and we are a part of that greatness. Isn't that significant enough? So that is our natural position, and we're happy with that position. And yeah, we're very, very happy with that humble position. We don't want, because love flows from that position. Now, in terms of putting this in the context of the Narada Bhakti Sutras, as you remember, Narada was discussing various opinions about what bhakti was, and expressed his own opinion that bhakti is to dedicate everything to God in a feeling way. And to have complete abject distress when separated from God, especially in forgetting him. And gave the examples as the exemplars of this consciousness as the gopis. And then we're in the section where he wants to describe that not are the gopis the topmost devotees, but this sense of devotion, the desire to find one's pleasure exclusively in the pleasure of God. And that's not narrow, that's broad. Because when you're finding your pleasure in the pleasure of God, you are finding your pleasure in the service of everything. Because what everything is in relationship to God. So you're finding your pleasure in that place, in a universal place. And rather than love God and hate others, you love everyone. Because they're part of God. And you serve everyone. And again, codependence means where you're serving not just people's needs, you serve people's desires when they are their needs. But when you serve people's desires when they are whims, and therefore divorced from their true benefit, one moves towards a type of service that is service for one's own self. The service becomes your need for some psychological reason. And it's not humility, because humility means to be satisfied with your insignificant position. Lack of self-esteem means that you're not, that your objective, you may not feel that you're significant, but your objective is to be significant. So you're not actually embracing humility. You're embracing a type of egotistical conception, where psychologically you feel you're not up to the mark of an egotistical objective. You're not thinking of God, you're thinking of yourself. You're not thinking of others, you're thinking of yourself, even if it's a low conception of the self. And in that condition, to get self-affirmation of one's ego and significance, one latches on to a person, the service of which gives one some ego. You feel a person so superior to you, but you have a relationship with them. So you do anything for an affirmation from them of your value. Not as the soul, but as the enjoyer and the controller. Anyway, after pointing to the gopis as the exemplars, this kind of consciousness of bhakti, to see one's pleasure in the pleasure of God, called bhakti, he says that this is far superior. Adhikartara. It is a greater qualification. It's superior than fruit of work, karma, gyan, and yoga. Because bhakti is the fruit of that effort. What is the goal? The goal is to become selfless and pure. That's what bhakti means. That is the process of bhakti. To become dependent and surrendered and in a mood of service to God. That's the goal. Do we want any other goal? You can become a jnani, and by your powers, detach yourself from the world. But there's still an abhiman, a self-conception of superiority, which is one of the inspirations for the process. So we have examples of jnanis and yogis who are very proud, because the success is dependent on their own effort. And bhakti's success is dependent on God. And if there's any effort we make, it is to depend on God. And to beg for mercy and to pray for mercy. So bhakti is the goal. It's the fruit of all endeavor. Therefore, it's superior. It says money can't buy happiness. So happiness is superior to money. We never say that happiness can't buy money, because happiness is superior. The goal or the objective is superior. So, bhakti is the fruit of the endeavor. It's where we want to go. It's what we are in perfection. Favorite statement of Prabhupada, the perfected state of a living entity is called a devotee. The perfected state of a living entity is called a devotee. That's the constitutional position of the living entity. So all these endeavors, yoginam api sarvesham madgate nataratmanam shradhavam bhajate yo mam same yuktamata. Of all yogis, one who worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. And because there's a sense of self-accomplishment, one is more prone to ego. Can a devotee be proud? Yes, but then it's not bhakti. He's not advanced. Can a jnani be proud? Yes. But it can be jnani, yes. Can a yogi be proud? Yes. Can a true bhakti be proud? No. He can't be proud. To the extent that he's proud is the extent that he's not a devotee. Because no sentiments can come from the proud heart. Bhakti is born of that sense of humility. Saint Augustine. Said that there are three most important practices to realize the self. Humility. Without humility, everything becomes useless. Gyan becomes useless. Vairagya becomes useless. Our possessions become useless. Everything becomes useless. Why? Because without bhakti, We appropriate everything in the service of the false conception of the self. The whole Bhagavatam is to get us to surrender by repeating again and again, who is God and who are we? And to realize it. Then bhakti begins. And bhakti is relishing your relationship with God. It doesn't begin unless you have that basic understanding. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matasarvam pravartate iti bhutva bhajanti mam buddha bhava. I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. The wise who know this engage in my devotional service. Everything is related to humility. Happiness is a heart filled with devotion. Devotion is just born of that sense. I am yours. Without humility, there's no relationships born of true affection, which is what relationships are. Manasamhita says, a Brahmin should ever shrink from honor as from poison and should always be desirous of disrespect as if of ambrosia, in the sense that honor can decrease the false conception of the self. And what is knowledge? It's one of the qualities of knowledge, humility. Because without being humble, without embracing our position, we're not in cognizance of the absolute reality, which includes ourselves as part of God. So knowledge itself is really based on humility. In the Dharmapada, a Buddhistic text, there's one verse that says, the fool who knows that he's a fool is for that reason a wise man. The fool who thinks he is wise is called a fool indeed. Remember a quote from C.S. Lewis, who said a very interesting thing. He said, never are we so proud as when we are good. So we have a tendency to appropriate. That's why even if one is a Brahmin and he's not a devotee and he has all the 16 ornaments of a Brahmin or whatever, however they are, Shamad, Dhammastapo, Saucham, tolerance, self-control. Shamad, Dhammastapo, Saucham, he's clean. Shamad, Dhammastapo, Saucham, Shantir, he's peaceful. Arjavam, honest. Gyanaja. Shalodhamastapo saucham shantir arjavam. Shantir arjavam. Gyana vijnanam. Astikyam. He's religious. Follows the rules. Gyanam Vijnanam Astikyam. Knowledge, realization. Has all these qualities. If he's not a devotee, he has no spiritual status. In this sense, devotee means humble in relationship to God and embracing that identity, then one appropriates each of these qualities for the ego. I am clean. I am knowledgeable. I am wise. I am tolerant. I am peaceful. I am self-control. And therefore I am great. And therefore you're a fool. Because the fool is one who thinks he is wise. And even if you're born in the lowest family, swapacha, dog eater, you're a devotee, then you can deliver the world. Because what spiritual teachings are is to communicate to people the glory of the humble position. Everyone has no good qualities, but he is humble. They can teach you. They can teach you. They can be your guru. I've seen it. I know many, many learned people. Many learned people. I know learned people are humble. I know learned people are proud. So it's not learning alone that makes one a spiritual preceptor. I know people that Western Indian whose intellectual prowess humble me. I just met one old friend I maybe haven't seen for 15 years. That's what happens in Vrindavan. And he's editing from North America, but he's editing this translation of the Bhagavad Sandarbha, which is the basis of Sambandhagyan, metaphysical knowledge of the bhakti tradition. And what one has to know to edit that is inconceivable. Because Jiva Goswami deals in depth with the knowledge and understanding of every other tradition of knowledge. And the subtleties of understanding of the Sanskrit and the concise understanding of what Jiva Goswami is getting at takes such an inconceivable frame of reference and a depth of understanding of the teachings of Jiva Goswami. I met this person after 15 years. I had a very nice talk to him. Talked to him for about a half hour, 45 minutes, when I didn't have that time. But not in a passing judgment. But whether or not I consider him advanced is not based on that. It's based on how much the teachings have affected that person's soul to truly embrace the greatness of God and one's humble position. One embraces humility because one really has knowledge and realization. I met one friend, I'm not going to share people's identities in this case, but I met one esteemed godbrother. And, you know, he's humble. And he was sharing with me that by the mercy of Vrindavan, after 40 years, he said, not, they weren't very long, but he had deep spiritual experiences in relationship to chanting the holy name. And knowing this person and just seeing his face when he does kirtan, depth of spiritual experience. It was inspiring for me. And his feelings that what I've been teaching, what have I been writing, without this experience, and we should want to trade anything. And what is that experience? It's the soul, which realizes it's the soul, which calls out from the core of their heart to the shelter of Krishna. Vrindavan is a very powerful place. I met another godfather. It was in Govardhan. He was just sitting in this, I mean, I didn't expect to run into him. But he was just, I know he does a lot of deep chanting, and he was just sitting in a place, in a secluded place. But somehow from that secluded place, he saw me and called me. Which is very unusual, because when someone is in deep bhajan, real bhajan means stay in one place. When he called me, I was kind of unusual, because I know it doesn't. But also, there's a different godbrother sharing the intensity of spiritual experience. But he said in Vrindavan, to him, everything is intensified. And it goes back to some other exchanges we had, where sometimes anxieties were intensified, now spiritual experiences were intensified. Anyway, it's a little bit different topic, but there's urbanization in Vrindavan, but it can't cover the glory of Vrindavan. And the glory of Vrindavan is the power of Vrindavan on the hearts of great souls who are here to extract that spirituality and therefore make the place valuable to us who are here, who are seeking that spirituality. So, we'll end now. Does anyone have any questions? People struggling to unmute their phones. I don't even think it works, by the way. Would anyone like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Rajarade Deja Singh.
Wow. Interesting class. It really is interesting. Who's that?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Is that Brajarade?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, this is Brajarade.
You weren't hearing me. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you deeply. May Krishna bless you, Giriraj, bless your family.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
When you listen, you're getting the vibration from Vrindavan, and I know your husband, Govardhan Bhakti, he also always listens to the classes. That's nice. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail in her humble voice. Hare Krishna, Gail.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, but I'm sorry to say that I missed most of your class today.
Can I tell you something? In my personal opinion, Gail, I'm serious. This is one of the, I think this is one of the most important classes I've ever given.
Why would you want to tell me that?
I'm just so disappointed because when I'm speaking, I have a vision of you because you're a regular in the audience. And then I was saying, well, this was so important to Gail that this class may have changed her life. I'm so glad she was sitting there listening. Get the tape from Ruti and listen to it.
I'm going to. But just so you know, I was doing something that was also very important, so I kind of had to miss it.
You want to tell me what it is?
I was engaged in some personal coaching. So.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, well, that's nice. Okay, but please listen to this class.
I'm saying,
I was actually thinking that Gail should hear this class. It would be very important for her spiritual life.
I'm definitely going to listen.
Okay, and the next time, write me when you listen to it, okay?
Send me
a message. I'll be relieved that you heard it.
Yes, and so will I.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I'll just get the, I know who listens because I get a list of the people that were on the class. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.